From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 655, Securing Your Cloud with guest Paula Janiskevitz. Recorded Thursday, August 15th, 2019. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back one of my favorites today, Paula Janiskevitz. I'm trying to say Polish words with lots of vowels. Wow. How long have I known you now? Since Tech Ed 2006 or 2007? Like, it's been a long time.
I think so. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the invitation. It is like 10 years.
It's been 10 years, yeah. Your bio is lengthy,
but
you've been an IT security auditor and penetration tester for a long time, MVP for a long time now.
Yeah, and already.
Keynoting all kinds of cool shows. What's the latest one? Was it Black Hat or Def Con?
So the last one I've been speaking at was Black Hat, but the biggest so far I've been keynoting at this year was the RSA in San Francisco.
Wow. That's like the premier security show.
That was pretty awesome. I was so happy to get this opportunity. And when you get to enter like the room and the whole conference venue, then you can see your face. I think it's quite embarrassing too. I was like, nobody sees me. I'm just going to hide somewhere there.
There is something about seeing your face larger than your actual face.
Yeah, then you are, for real.
Yeah, no, it's spooky. So what was your topic for the keynote?
So it was about different, it was like a hacker's perspective. So in general, the different types of attacks that are happening in the infrastructure, that every single time you are getting into an infrastructure, they just work out. And that's the perspective. And the funny thing is that literally this week, I've been doing the project, which was like a pen test as well. And same thing. We've got 2019 and same things are working like 10 years ago. Of course, things are getting better, but still you can see the same mistakes.
Well, and I recall on one of your previous shows, and I'd be loath to figure out which one it was because you've done a few, you made that basic point. It's like, I'm going to get in. Penetration is all kind of inevitable. The question is, what happens next?
Well, yeah, exactly. So what happens next is important. So how much information you are able to extract. And unfortunately, you're pretty much always able to extract a lot. And it doesn't really matter like which country, which region, what type of company, whether it's finance or government and so on. Same things happen.
Absolutely. And the last show we did, which is a little over a year ago, we were talking about building a cybersecurity team, which you've been immersed in because I see Secure is growing like crazy. There was a comment from a listener. This actually comes from John Gallagher, who said, I know it's jumping in months later, but the bit at the end really struck me. And we were talking about professionalism and certification and so forth. And John says, it would be great to have at least one organization to help guarantee the quality of developers and IT folks and to provide a clear on-ramp for new people.
Good point. But so here's one thing for that.
And he goes into, I bet the direction you're going in is like, as soon as you have that sort of certifying body, you take on liability. And that's what he asks is like, what liability would it actually cover for businesses for the IT pros or developers? Right now, it looks like businesses manage to push the liability on the customers, which I don't know that that's true. The customers actually don't own any liability. They're just responsible for their own security. And he finishes by saying, maybe GDPR will change things, but how much of a liability do businesses actually have? Around IT or dev. I think employee liability is always there, right? If you employ someone and they do something that creates harm, the company has some liability, one way or the other. With software liability, it's tricky just because you have these EULAs, the end user license agreements, that really limit it. And I think this is where we went in that last conversation. I know it was a year ago where we talked about you know, for the industry to grow up, we would have to take responsibility as creators of software and operators of software for the harm that software causes. And that's specifically what EULAs are trying to avoid. And if we took that on, then you could go into what a certifying body looks like. And it is a certifying body that takes on that liability.
Yeah, it's a very interesting comment, actually. And there's always a problem about that. First of all, regarding the some organization that could assure equality that if you, for example, are certified of a certain kind of certification, then does it really mean that you are, as they say so, right? So certification, it has been for so many years known more right now as I don't want to sound ignorant, but a little bit as a paper, though, of course, it shows that you have done a certain effort in order to achieve it.
Yeah.
But without, it doesn't mean,
without right? a certifying body taking on liability for you, like when you look at a lawyer, that lawyer passed mm-hmm. a bar exam, and included in his professional association is liability for malpractice. If he makes a mistake, that certifying body is responsible. Same for engineers, same for doctors. Like, that to me is the definition of a profession, is that you have a certifying body that is liable for you, so that you are beholden to them ahead of the customer, effectively. And we don't have anything like that in IT.
It's a very good idea, but I guess it will be quite hard to get that type of certificate. But I like the idea a lot. And if there was one to certify that you are good, or that company out there has a good infrastructure and so on, then I think it would be more of a job of an insurance companies or some educational institutions to cooperate with insurance companies to introduce that kind of a service. Sounds to me like a future, actually.
Yeah. There might be that intermediary phase, the idea that you would buy an insurance policy to protect yourself, say, against breaches. Not guaranteeing that breaches are impossible, but that you'll, say, be compliant with GDPR. But then that policyholder, that insurer, is then going to want qualified people to do the maintenance on the organization of the policyholder. And so that's when you get into a certifying body that holds liability. It's a possible route. It's interesting to think about. The other side of that is the customer then has to spend more money, has to spend money for that protection. And that gives us room for creating quote-unquote professionals.
Yeah, I totally agree about that. And that's one thing. A second, that would be quite a nice challenge as well to have, especially in cybersecurity, because cybersecurity consists of so many different types of subjects about any other subjects or skills, I should say.
So it's so generalized.
You need to be good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so long story short, like to certify someone around this, someone would need to create a standard. And that was also part of our conversation last time, which to me sounds absolutely exciting, because what are the measures that would say that you're good? And in cyber, there are so many different types of measures. So though at the end, if there was an organization that could introduce a really long list that could say that this person or this organization in cyber is good.
Yeah.
I would love to be part of that. If actually this is my dream, so that maybe I will introduce it one day. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Let's see.
But I do think the organization that takes on the liability is the one that gets to sort of decide that. If it's the one willing to risk their money is the one who actually gets to say, well, this is my risk, my exposure. So I'm going to set the standard one way or the other. Obviously, they should get advice from experts, and I would certainly put you in that category. But it is who's willing to take on the risk, because nobody seems to be doing that right now.
Yeah, true that. And even though you've got insurance, it's more of a, like, they will cover the cost. Of course, there are different conditions around the world, but they will cover the cost of consultants up to the certain level if something happens to you, etc. And it's still a very growing subject, though more popular in less popular in Europe, I would say.
Interesting.
More popular somewhere else, yeah. So we are more relying on our own, like, judgment. So we're like, we did it this way, we trust ourselves, we don't need insurance because it's okay. And we tested it. We did penetration tests from this company, that company, and so on. So they kind of like, it's a very traditional approach.
But with I would think with Europe and the GDPR, putting sort of requirements around breach and the liability around breach, like the fines and so forth, that actually puts a dollar amount on a breach that possibly gives you room for an insurance policy and certainly for paying for services to protect yourself.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It does put the room. And also, interesting perspective, we've been also in touch with some insurance agency that in a case of emergency, so there's like a new way of insuring different types of companies, so that in case of emergency, we will come and then we will do a judgment as an architect, what's next?
Right.
So that's kind of like an advisory that you can technically buy. We're kind of like, it's still like in a thinking process, but this is an idea that is coming in. But let's see about that, yeah? But still not that many companies want
to. But you are starting to offer breach recovery services, like specifically you believe you've been breached, let us help you?
Yeah, pretty much. So we do offer that, but we offer that in various ways. So for example, when there's a company, we are doing that kind of a project also right now. And it's a pretty big project of a recovery service to check, because there is a massive attack that happened in one of the organizations. And we are checking within a different locations around the world if the infrastructure on the site is safe, because that spread it in a very weird way. And it was, in our opinion, a targeted attack. So we are doing the analysis for that. But this was like, we did not really have even a contract of that customer. So the customer came and they were like, guys, we are in trouble. Could you please help us? So one thing is insurance, so that you don't have to worry about searching for someone that could help you.
Right.
But on the other hand, this world is so small. So it might make sense as well. So that you are already establishing a network of consultants that you know, that you trust, and so on. And maybe you don't need an insurance. Maybe you just need a reaction that is quick enough.
Yeah. The question is, what does the insurance do for you? And isn't having good people available sufficient insurance? Like, you don't actually need money. You need skilled people more than anything.
Yes, pretty much. Skilled and having experience about that kind of situations. We also have like different contracts. For example, it's like a retainer fee. So the customers pay us X amount. And then basically, within that, we do different services. But if something happens, then we are using some hours from the top of the agreement, and then we are doing something for them, etc. So this kind of things are also there. So that's kind of like, it's not really liability, but it's immediate help. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I should thank John for his comment on the show. And we're going to send you a Run As Radio mug. So contact us, give us your address. We'll ship that out to you. I'm also thinking in terms of this kind of thing, that how many organizations now are moving to the cloud because they feel like it decreases their liability or their security needs? Because if I'm in the cloud, I'm secure, right?
Yeah, pretty much. right?
I don't know if it's true. I just think that it's easy to believe that.
Not really. Depends on the types of services that you've got. That's A. B. Another case that I have for you, interesting too. In Asia, we were doing the project of the customer that is actually in the cloud, and their Office 365 has been hacked. Yeah, and they took over their domain admin over there, and they had to go through the whole recovery process to take over their own infrastructure. And we were helping them to do that. Plus, we were also doing the analysis, which also is quite interesting, because cloud is a beautiful concept, but when it's about forensics, now you are actually having some surprises. And I don't want to discourage anyone, because cloud has still so much more like the options over here that you could use that will definitely help your business. But in a case of emergency, in order to get access to the logs, you have to make an effort. And that effort is to be on a call with people, ask them to provide you this information, et cetera, et cetera. So it also depends on your subscription level and so on. So sometimes we don't realize. It's a little bit like you are like having a backup, but you're never testing it. Yeah. So that has been a comment, I'd say 10 years ago, that, but do you really test your backup? And then some companies were like, aha, no, we don't, blah, blah. And then in the case of emergency, the backup doesn't work because they were doing it in a strange way, whatever. Yeah. Right. It's the same thing right now in cloud. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all nice and continuous, but in a case of emergency, do you know what to do?
Yeah.
How does your backup procedure look like? What's the incident response? Where do you get the information from? So that kind of things.
Yeah, I was back when I did real work, and admittedly, it's been a while. I was big on making books called In Case Of, and it's only because I'd been through enough events where I realized you are not at your best during that kind of crisis, and the more stuff you can write down in advance, the less likely you are to fumble or make the situation worse. Just knowing the right phone numbers and account numbers and all that kind of information is incredibly vital. And when you're in a crisis, it's super hard to find them.
Yeah, totally. It is hard to find, but that's why it's so important to make sure that you are super ready, like before any type of an incident like this. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, standard thing, right? Like, It's like a crisis management. So you need someone to plan what's going to happen, where are we going to be in trouble? And
right.
That doesn't really differ much from on-prem versus in the cloud. And in the cloud is even more difficult. So that's something that needs to be planned.
It's not going to save you either way. And Paul, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by Okta. Today's IT teams have to juggle securing cloud services and managing legacy on-prem solutions. For two decades, organizations have been stuck with Active Directory, but it's just not built to support your company's long-term strategy. Choose Okta, the modern identity platform that secures access to your cloud and on-prem apps. Frustrated with Active Directory's narrow focus on employees? Use Okta to provide secure access to employees, customers, partners, servers, and more. Have a complex identity structure? Okta simplifies domain consolidation, accelerating M&A. Worried about your latest security audit? With Okta, you can eliminate AD vulnerabilities and enforce better overall security. Say goodbye to failed pen tests and AD patches. Say hello to agile, admin-friendly IT. To learn more, visit okta.com/rethinkAD. And we're back. This is Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Paula. Here we go with the last name.
Yeah,
Mushkevich. I practice every time and I smash it up every time.
No worries.
We're talking about cybersecurity and cloud security in general, but also this idea of real contingency planning. And I find people very resistant to it, that sitting down and working through bad scenarios like the death of senior leadership in an organization, or I worked through a scenario where this is before cloud, where we burn the building down, right? The building's burnt down. There's a smoke hole in the ground where the building used to be. Like, what do we need first? How do we recover? Or should we recover? I think was an interesting question too. It's like, does it make sense to continue the business after that?
Yeah. So cloud definitely helps you with this.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's the big benefit. And right now we are still in a discussion, like, should it be in a cloud or not? And so on. But like, more and more companies, they start to see the benefit. And we totally, like in my team, we totally love it. Though forensically, that is a bit of a challenge. And that's the subject that I don't see coming in yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, there are specialists that are doing this, etc. But that is a skill to have. So in my team, for example, we are right now growing that skill because we want to be absolutely ready with the standardized approach that when our customer is going to have a problem, then we're coming in and we know exactly what to do per each scenario. Because right now we had a bunch of the projects that were with the request, could you guys please analyze what happened with our Office 365, what happened in Azure? We've got machines in Azure, this environment in Azure. How can I see this and that and this? So, of course, on the servers, you got logs, but it would be also nice to see who was for real connecting to you.
Oh, right.
I got some example for you. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I'm going to be doing on Monday. And I'm looking forward to this because we've got a customer that also has Office 365 and all the infrastructure, like they've got, or most of the infrastructure they've got also in a cloud. And there is a like executive that was targeted. Mm-hmm. And simple thing, you know, like, so he was targeted to enter username and password that was looking like Outlook, yeah, online.
Right.
So he did that and his password was leaked and someone, and here's the fun part, someone managed to get access to this guy's mailbox.
Right.
Okay. Well, and then they're coming to us and they're asking us a question. Okay, what's next?
What do we do?
What do we do?
So the what's fun here is you've heard the spear phishing circumstances where it looks like it's the emails being sent from the boss. But what happens if someone hijacks the boss's email box and really is sending emails as the boss?
Yeah, exactly. So okay. So these emails were sent, let's say, to someone and they were then deleted. And then, okay, we will need to recover them. Fine. So let's check for that. Now, what are the options? How far can you delete those? So these are the skills that someone needs to have in order to do that forensics, because spear phishing has always been there and it does not, and its conditions, they don't change whether you are in the cloud or not. It's the same problem because it targets people. Mm-hmm. But in the cloud, it's a challenge because they have just implemented Office 365. So it's like, it's the same, like you've just implemented Windows and you just implemented mail services in your company. What to do?
Yeah. And so you're new.
And
to
they
it.
Don't know what to do.
Right. They're still not familiar with it. Do you have a checklist? What do you tend to tell people to do first when it comes to securing cloud stuff?
We do have a checklist. Absolutely. So securing the cloud, it's one thing, but also we are right now creating a checklist of things to check for if you're going to be in this situation.
Right.
So different scenarios. So your mailbox, okay. Your server, okay. That service, fine. Data leaked, fine. So we will need to know how to check as much as you can out of the product, out of the solution, to provide you more information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so just what they walk through, how to each thing they need to figure out. But do you give advice, or, you know, what do you recommend folks? Where should they start when it comes to securing their Office 365's accounts and their cloud accounts in general?
One of the things that we always start with is the configuration review. Mm-hmm. Because one thing is solutions features, but another one is architecture design. So we always like to have a look at that because that might, for example, expose some issues over here. Mm-hmm. But of course, things like different types of filtering methods, different types of options for not allowing different URLs to be clicked, and they're going through reputation services. So this is the easy part that mm-hmm. needs to be there. And over here, you, in the case of Office 365, somewhat rely on Microsoft, right? Because if you click on the link somewhere in Outlook, then basically it's going to take you through their reputation service and then tell you whether this link is good or wrong. Okay, fine. But, and we are relying on some machine learning out there, etc. Fine. But of course, things can go wrong. Yes. And of course, you can design, and we are doing this, by the way, all the time, design different types of spear phishing techniques that will not be discovered this way because we are intelligent out there. So we are dealing with some machine out there that hopefully did not see the pattern that we have designed. Yeah. So this is a little bit battle here. It's not easy though.
Yep.
But it's happening. And if you've got this 0 day, let's call it this way, phishing, spear phishing, then of course it's going to come through. And then the other solutions more on-prem are supposed to help you. Yes. Yeah, so things like code execution prevention, mm-hmm. Et cetera. So it depends. Where do you have this Outlook? How do you use your computer, et cetera? So many, many things out there. But at the end, it is important to see if you've got services in the cloud, where this email comes from, to read more information about it and so on. So that type of data should be visible in a cloud, and it is, but sometimes it's limited.
Sure. I got to think, making sure the boss's account doesn't have admin privileges to your Office 365 system. Like the email or the account that owns the control of your cloud services shouldn't be a routinely used account. Like, this seems to me like just another layer of just enough administration rights.
Yeah, of course. So this is a classic. So in our team, we always say one thing, that domain admin is just a big misconception in the name.
Right.
Because it should be called domain controller admin.
Right.
And that's it. That's more referring, of course, to the on-prem situation, but still, even in a cloud, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when you call it like this, it when you are logging on with a domain controller admin to other server, it just feels bad.
Yeah. But creating that friction where, for us at least, that when you're going to, you know, give someone rights into Office 365 or into any of these cloud services, that you use a separate account solely for that purpose, so that anybody else's account, anybody that would know those credentials, they would never type them in anywhere. They would never type them into a spoofed Outlook web page.
That's one thing. And another one is that you've got multi-factor authentication that could definitely help it. Yeah.
Right.
So even though you type in that password, it's fine because you still need to use your mobile phone.
Right.
And if they were using it with Office 365, which, by the way, they could,
yeah,
but they did not. So, and again, architecture design review, this is what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So what is out there that should supposed to be there, at least for the privilege accounts, then they would not have that kind of a problem.
Right. And just so this is that review, just to say, look, especially with administrative accounts, they multi-factor's got to be everywhere, right?
Yes, yes.
You could tolerate your users complaining about multi-factor, but you can't tolerate your administrators.
Well, you know, multi-factor authentication can be also nice. Yeah. So you can use your app. You can have an app, the authenticator app that could, mm-hmm, technically help you to get in somewhere. So it's as long as it's becoming comfortable, and it can be comfortable, then what's the problem? Yeah. So it used to be that you need to have a token from which you need to type in some numbers,
yeah,
one-time password, whatever. That's a little old school. So as long as you've got an app and you put your, you just open it, and then maybe you can identify yourself with a face,
yeah,
etc. Then it's just like, it's fun. I would say it's more fun. And not only it's very comfortable, but it's also fun.
Do you feel like we're actually going to get past passwords? I've been looking to talk to some of the Microsoft folks that are saying, hey, we're getting beyond passwords. But no shows yet. Is it practical?
You know, I agree with that, that we're going to get there one day. But funny part is that approximately 10 years ago, we were starting to have a conversation about the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And cloud is there, but the world isn't quite there yet.
Right.
So, of course, lots of companies are using it. So it's 10 years. It's a lot of time in IT. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I remind myself what mobile phone I was using 10 years ago, it was a very old school mobile phone when you look at this from a 2 days perspective. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So same thing. And yeah, there was a keynote last year at Microsoft Ignite when they were announcing, Microsoft was announcing, of course, the live without passwords.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful, but it means that there's a huge investment mainly to be made for different types of services to be rewritten in order to provide that. I would love to see that for every single like web portal that you got, you're buying shoes online on your favorite online store, you've got an app. So what I kind of see over here maybe is that you would need to standardize it under certain in a certain direction, and there could be a one app that you could, as a provider of the online store, sign up for, so that this app will authenticate you. And
right,
that's another, by the way, business opportunity for them. So to simplify that kind of conversion here. But when it happens, I mean, it's going to take some time until it becomes a standard.
Sure.
But I believe it's going to happen.
I have seen since then, they've offered a lot more features in the FIDO key space. Like, I've started using YubiKeys for my password, mm-hmm, accounts and for GitHub and things like that. I don't think I'm ready to do it for Windows authentication yet, but I like my YubiKeys. I think they're good.
Yeah, I'm using them too. And in our team, we are also using them.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, the concept is fantastic. Yeah. And you can also integrate different types of apps with those and so on. So concept is nice. and it's still passwordless. I'm thinking more about leveraging over here your mobile phone, right?
Yeah.
Or, for example, your Apple Watch or any other watch that could have an app that when you put your finger on it or something, then it's going to authenticate you. So that's very convenient. And it's still related to you as a human. So if you integrate it, for example, with a face or thumbprint, etc., that's pretty cool because it simplifies things and it still maintains the principles for good authentication, which is something you've got, yeah, something you have over here.
Yeah.
Now, something you know, it's passed, and a question is, in what kind of a way? Because you put your PIN in your phone, so that's something that you know. So we will need to interpret it again.
Yeah, and I think there's got to be a distinction between IT professionals, security professionals, and regular consumers. The chances of a regular consumer or even a regular a business employee losing a YubiKey is much higher than their chance of losing a phone. Their phone.
Right, right. That makes sense. And also within these apps, you need to have a confirmation, another confirmation, yes? Mm-hmm. Like you can set up with the iPhone right now that for the apps like, for example, Signal, you can specify that you would like to have another face authentication.
Right. So you can ask for thing. Additional authentication on a routine basis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is the concept.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. But it is interesting to just think through needing to secure all these different elements. But you're right, the pieces are there. It's up to us to actually implement them.
Yes, absolutely. And again, investment is needed. So while we're going to be focusing on our dreams, implementing life without passwords, there is still a big part of the world that will probably not go this way. Because it's going to be expensive to write or change my website again. And I understand that in order to grow, we need to adjust to the modern world, but not everybody would be able to afford it, as simple as this.
Yeah, and I don't see any regulations coming along demanding that anytime soon either. So, yeah, I don't know that I'm impressed with what's happened with GDPR. I mean, I'm glad they did it. I haven't seen, has anywhere in the EU actually started utilizing those laws to go after bad actors?
Yeah, there were some fines given, absolutely. Mm-hmm. They made the news as well, but you kind of like don't really hear them that loudly. Maybe it's also because they go under the radar, so you don't want to be known as these guys that have violated the privacy laws.
Right.
So they've been just fined and then nobody really talks about it. So I think it's more of that. But of course, if it's a big corporation, then that makes the news. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the shaming part is a non-trivial part of the equation. Although generally speaking, we found that the consequences of breaches for these different companies have been very low.
Yeah, because that has been a surprise for everybody. Everybody kind of like followed their privacy rules. GDPR just made it more consistent. And but on the other hand, what I can see is that that is always a part of everybody's conversation. Mm-hmm. For example, when I was checking in a hotel in the countries that are not related with the GDPR, can someone actually make a copy of your passport?
Right.
So they got like a Xero machine, so the copier, and then they take your passport and they're like, yeah, we need to make a copy. Bang, they make a copy. And then they give you the passport back.
Yeah.
And the question is this a GDPR compliant? And the answer is, probably not.
Probably not.
Because the question is, how do they store your password details?
Yeah. Well, they store it as a piece of paper stuck in a file somewhere.
Exactly. And with my team, because I was checking in a hotel with my team where we're like, okay, so that's their requirement, which is funny. And everybody made a comment that, hey, this is not GDPR compliant.
Right.
So GDPR is out there in our minds, but not in the practice, or at least not always.
Well, at the minimum, just the right to be forgotten to say, hey, you have to destroy that paper now.
Right. Yeah. So what are you going to do with this paper? And they're going to be like, well, we're going to store it in our files. Mm-hmm, how? And GDPR says in an appropriate way. Of course, I'm shortening the theory right now, but it's a kind of a statement that it's an appropriate way. So what do you consider as an appropriate way? Putting this in some kind of a shelf somewhere in a box, is this appropriate?
Yeah, when it'll eventually be thrown out in the trash and...
yeah, how, maybe shredded. Okay, great. Maybe. And they could say, yes, it's appropriate because that room is locked and we've got a security camera over there. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Although I think the average person asking for your passport at a front desk isn't able to answer that question that well.
Yeah, most probably, but I wish, and I'm dreaming about this to be different.
Yeah, but I do appreciate that these are the same sort of processes we're still figuring out around how we secure our cloud. Not that we own it per se, but that the piece of the cloud that we're using has to actually have the same sort of procedures set up.
Yeah. So it's a big challenge for everybody. And but I'm very glad, you know, that this subject is out there because someone had to step in and say, hey, enough, you are gathering too much information. This is not good. And I think people feel better about that.
Yeah.
Even though they're still doing the same things and they're putting their data, whatever, but they feel better about that because at least they're protected by the law.
It's moving in the right direction, I guess.
I would say so. Yeah.
So what's next for you? Where can people see you in action? I got to imagine you're going to be at Ignite.
I'm going to be in Ignite. But before that, I'm going to be actually in Singapore.
Oh.
Because I'll be giving lectures over there at the university.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be about cybersecurity, different types of subjects, perspectives, also forensics. So I'm so much looking forward to it, to see young faces.
Nice.
Learning cybersecurity. But in public, it's going to be Ignite, yes. And yeah. I totally can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a humongous show. I'll be making podcasts from there as usual.
Always. So I will see you there too.
You bet. Paula, so nice to talk to you again. Thanks for coming on the show.
Always. Thank you so much for the invitation.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.